CKUT Radio 90.3 in Montreal, Quebec. I'm Joe Broadhurst, and on the phone I am pleased to be joined by Kathleen Nguyen, Communications Director slash Investigator for Black Box Voting Incorporated, currently the top organization researching voter fraud in the United States. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Fine, Joe, and I hope everyone there is doing well.
We are. We're cold, but
yes,
we're doing fine.
As usual.
I wondered if you could start off by giving us a little bit of history of black box voting, when it got started, and some of the people behind the scenes that are doing all the work.
Well, actually, black box voting, well, Bev Harris is the founder and executive director of Black Box Voting, and Bev Harris was the one that started this, the ball rolling with us really bringing to the table issue, you know, people discussing the issue with electronic voting in America. And this started in January of 2003 when she found 40,000 unprotected computer files on a FTP site that Diebold Elections had been storing.
40,000 files?
Yeah. They stored these files on an open website, an obscure site, never revealed to any public groups or generally, you know, unknown to the public, but known among election industry insiders and available actually to any hacker with a laptop, which was concerning to her when she accidentally came across these files.
And she had some inclination as to maybe there was some fraud going on, and she was just out there researching.
Well, actually, what started it was an article written by Lynn Landis, an investigative journalist here in, out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, basically saying elections in America assume crooks are in control, because Lynn has been at the forefront of pointing the finger at that there's something wrong with these electronic voting machines, because you really don't know. She contends that the voter isn't voting, it's the machine that votes, and we just have to assume that the machine accurately counts that vote, but we have no way of knowing. And so after reading that article, it prompted Bev, who is an investigative journalist and had investigated fraud in businesses, corporate fraud, she thought, you know, the 20-minute project, she'd check on, you know, this issue to find out more about it, because that's her background. And when she did, that's when she stumbled across these 40,000, computer files that they contained the, it was the virtual handbook for vote tampering, and they contained diagrams of remote communication setups, passwords, source code, user manuals. You know, it's just information that there's just no way that it should have been up on this FTP site available to someone coming across it like she did. So she knew when she found that something was wrong based on what it contained in this, in this 40,000 files.
What exactly did she do next? How did she?
Well, she immediately contacted some computer scientists, Dr. Avi Rubin and Dr. David Dill. She does not have a computer background herself personally, but she knew she had something, and she called this person that she first started out with, David Allen, and said, "What do you have here?" And he said something incredibly stupid, because of the fact that they'd put it up on this site for all these people to log on to and have access to. And when the scientists got hold of it, they knew that this was bad too, and they subsequently wrote reports on what this meant when they read about the source code. But in our opinion, unfortunately, we don't think up until recently anyone has gone far enough and find out exactly what we had in our hands. Those 40,000 files Bev Harris has in a safety deposit box in the bank somewhere, and that someone she knows is close to has them, because these have never thoroughly been examined. And recently when we brought from Finland a computer expert, Harry Hursti, he started looking into it and found, my God, why hasn't anyone spoken out more definitively? He said this source code proves these machines were set up to be hacked into based on the source code that he found. And he couldn't understand why in America none of the scientists were more forthcoming with that information. And we found out later that, you know, there was reasons behind that, that made us realize that you should never allow experts be in charge of your elections and to be totally dependent on them, as well as the vendor, the manufacturer of these machines, to trust them to tell you everything, because it was the citizens who eventually forced the issue out there and pointed that out, that the fact that these machines for over 15 years have been subject to security breaches based on the memory card and other, and the GEM software, that they were certified and should never have been certified as safe, secure, and ready to be used, you know.
And are we talking about industry-wide people accessing those files that were online, or was that one specific company?
Well, election industry, like election officials and supervisors and directors of the boards of elections, I think, had access to these this FTP site, because that's how they communicated. In fact, over, you know, they had it had all kinds of information and communications that it didn't make sense, and we couldn't understand why a voting company would be so cavalier about such information like that, because people would have access to people's state's voting data, data that should never have been up there, available for anyone to see and everyone to see. So it was that in and of itself, the minute she put that out there and the scientists talked about it, they immediately slapped a cease and desist on Bev Harris and brought down her website because of these, her discovery of these files, because they knew they shouldn't have done it, and they've been up there about 7 years, and they just, the arrogance of such behavior has, you know, proven that God only knows what else we can discover as we move along this, you know, trail that they're leaving through these 40,000 files. It's so much to try to tell you, it's, you know, how to wrap your head around this. And specifically, no one but election officials should have been, had access to this. Unfortunately, the way it was set up was stupid, and Diebold admits it was a terrible mistake.
Okay. And how many volunteers do you have right now?
There are three of us. For a while, and only up until 2 months ago, there was just me and Bev Harris.
Wow.
And so, two middle-aged women can cause a lot of trouble.
Yes, and you have, which is fantastic, because you're making everybody start. We're starting to see things in the news, and we're starting to actually see action taken by some states regarding some of this stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can you tell us, in the past maybe year and a half, some of the top things that you guys have uncovered, like in California, Florida, Ohio, some of these large
right,
markets that
right.
have really made a large impact on the outcome of the elections in the United States?
Well, it has been a hodgepodge of discoveries, and part of the reason for that is we go out into the field and we investigate in person. We go to the election offices. We meet with individuals and people who want to talk to us about what they know and what they've seen, and we gather this information and we videotape just about everything. So, because the one way to make certain that we document certain events and meetings so that the public can see for up close, see it as it's happening, it's a powerful way to make our point as to how bad it really is. And some of the things we discovered, like when we, down in July of 2004, we were down in McKinney, Texas. And the reason that we've been able to go after Diebold so effectively has been one night about 3 in the morning, they had a big dumpster in the back of their offices in McKinney, Texas, Diebold did. And in Texas, it's legal if they throw it in a dumpster, it's open to public. You can take it. So we did, and we jumped in the dumpster and pulled out about 12 huge bags of information, and in that we found accounting records and memos and confidential communications that they, it looked like they were trying to get rid of stuff. They were going to be audited by their main office, and I think that they were getting rid of accounting records that didn't jive appropriately, you know, with that kind of an audit. And we found amazing information with regard to Diebold spends hundreds of thousands of dollars for success fees. We don't know to whom, but we know that people are getting paid large sums of money if they bring Diebold to their particular county or state. And that is we found in one instance, from the information we found in that dumpster, $20,000 a month was being paid to a gentleman, a Dr. Juan Andrade. He was a highly, you know, respected Hispanic leader in Chicago. And we went to interview him because we couldn't understand why only two Hispanic citizens have received a presidential medal for their work in their community, and he was one of them. And we couldn't understand, why would he be getting $20,000 a month from Diebold? What could he possibly gain in his role as a community leader by lobbying for a voting machine vendor? So we interviewed him and found out that basically for over about 18 months, if not longer, he was paid $20,000 a month. And when we asked him why, he said basically he was lobbying for Diebold, and that money was to help persuade election officials to decide to go with Diebold as their voting system. And they were set it up to have a $45 million Diebold contract in Cook County and Chicago area. And because of that interview, we were able to stop them from purchasing Diebold because of the conflict of interest they clearly felt was in play with the persuasive aspect of it, the money, you know, which is usually the core problem. Money does grease a lot of hands in getting these machines in place, and it seems to have a lot of power, because after having done that, we found out that he had a partnership with a gentleman in Ohio, Pat Galena, and Pat Galena was recently caught giving $10,000 to a election supervisor in Warren County, Ohio, just around the time he was about to select the voting system for his county. And he also gave $50,000 to Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell of Ohio for his political reasons. For, you know, it certainly, and between Juan Andrade, they had a business that. ACG Group, well, Andrade and Celebrisi, the gentleman in Ohio, and G for Galena. Well, what they've been doing is Diebold was putting money through that company, and Galena was pulling it out on the other end in Ohio, lobbying on behalf of Diebold to get it into Ohio, which he's been actually very successful at thus far. But we've caused them to pause and start looking at these machines more closely, because that kind of information makes people start questioning what kind of influence peddling has been going on here to get these voting machines in place. So it has slowed that up, and money has always been a real issue with this, because large payments from Diebold are fueling influence peddling, and these payments are paid out to others. And we have to question how many other places this kind of thing is going on. We were just able to question it based on what we were able to find in that dumpster. So it has been a hard row to hoe, because they're not helping us. They're not, you know, these voting machine companies are very secretive, very airtight. They don't share information, and it's really hard to come by. Election officials are totally at their mercy, because they have to depend on them for technical support and to maintain and upgrade their systems. So they become like family with these machine vendors. So it becomes a kind of a tinker toy effect, where election officials then become employees when they leave their role as an election official. They go to work for the vendor and use their influence as in that area to help get the vendor in places throughout the state, or people who work for the vendor start to lobby for it and become a lobbyist, and they're paid huge sums of money by Diebold and the other voting machine companies to go out there and persuade states to buy their voting machines. And
now, is there, because in other industries, and we can actually say that, which is really sad, but the election process is an industry.
Yes.
But in other industries, say, such as media and stuff, there are outside groups that are watching over these, that are separate from the government and separate from the industry. There's no organization like that?
Well, Black Box Voting is the only investigative arm where we actually are like an investigative company. I mean, you know, organization. Most of the other organizations are focused on legislation, or they don't get into the field and try to dig up the evidence. I mean, they don't jump into dumpsters, and they don't interview people and try, you know, with information we find to get them on film either lying or contradicting, you know, what others are saying. I mean, we catch them in the act of being themselves so that we can, because what has occurred, because we privatized our voting systems by giving, you know, these corporations the upper hand, is now we are forced to have to use these kinds of measures to get to the truth, because we've suspected for over 2 years now that everything we've discovered lately has been, you know, not theory but fact, but they've called us conspiracy theorists and nuts, and without evidence we have not been able to control the message and say, wait a minute, we need to stop this runaway train. And so other organizations, we think of the swarm effect. We try, everything is necessary. Need the other organizations on the inside as well as us. We consider ourselves on the outside because we don't want to depend on donors from specific organizations or corporations. We want to be free to investigate this objectively and not be held to any kind of restrictions, because we don't think we can get to the truth any other way. But we also need the others who have access to the inside so that we can know what's going on in the entire picture here, because it's pretty widespread and multi-layered, this issue. And we hope Canada will take lessons from what we've learned and really start checking out what we're finding out, because Diebold is in Canada too. In fact, that's global election system is started in Canada, and that Diebold purchased it from that company based in Canada.
I'm going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I definitely want to talk about more about Diebold. But I just want real quickly to tell our listeners that they have the right to do what you're doing. And they have the right to videotape and to monitor their election process, because it is their election process.
Exactly.